Today's presenter is Robert Outlaw. Robert is a level 2 support engineer for Westfair XD. His previous work included Westfair, ZOS, and L2 support. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Robert.
Thanks, Elijah. I'd like to thank everyone for being here. I'm going to jump right to slide 2 and discuss our agenda. I do have 4 main bullet points I want to cover on this presentation. I want to give kind of a high-level overview of the on-demand router. I want to take a quick look at its guts, because it's really important to understand the things going on that make it tick. I want to discuss the tracing of the ODR, how to set up a trace, and some basic things you can do to analyze the trace that you collect. From there, I want to discuss common HTTP error codes that we see when you're trying to route requests to the ODR and they fail. 404s, 503s, 504s, these kind of issues. I want to briefly discuss those. And finally, I want to give a short description of a couple of scripts that we ship with Webster XD that are invaluable to debugging these ODR troubles, and that they're very useful for you. Okay, let's move to slide 3. So what is the on-demand router? The on-demand router, like I see here, is an intelligent proxy server that really represents the core of the XD operations optimization package. The on-demand router really is the key piece that allows all the different functions, the dynamic workload management, the application placement, the request flow monitor, and the held controller, all these things, they work with the on-demand router, and the on-demand router makes decisions based off the information gathered from those components in terms of where to route incoming HTTP requests to back-end application servers. Move to slide 4. So one of the key technologies that the on-demand router uses is what's known as the on-demand configuration componentry. The on-demand configuration componentry is a kind of a distributed piece of configuration code. And what it does is it allows different Webster processes to be aware of application states, whether a server is running or not. If a server is running, what are its endpoints, the HTTP container or the secure HTTP container ports, other runtime information, what virtual host it has. It really gives a quick representation in terms of how these app servers can take and receive requests and what their states are in. You can kind of think of it as sort of a distributed state repository, if you will, in that each server will contribute its own ODC information to the entire cell. Now the ODR comes in, because what happens is the ODR will actually read all this ODC information gathered across the cell in order to determine how it should route requests. So when the ODR makes decisions, a lot of times it comes down to what's in the ODC, what does it see there, and in terms of how it will go and properly route a request. So let's go to slide 5. It's important to note that ODC information is not static. The ODR does read in a large chunk of ODC information when it starts up. You see this happen, and what it does is the ODC information will read this in so that the ODR can be kind of initialized, so they can have kind of an initial state in terms of how it should properly route requests to backend servers. So these states can change. Application servers can start and stop. Configuration changes can be made. Servers can be deleted. They can be added. All this happens dynamically, and we're not going to read in the whole chunk of information each time that happens. That would be way too much. So what happens is, as changes are made, ODC will go and it will kind of post these changes to kind of an internal bulletin board, so to speak. And what we'll see there, what we'll see is that the ODR will actually read in, will be watching this bulletin board, and will be reading in these changes in order to have the most accurate reflection of the current runtime of the WebSphere cell that it is involved in. So as you can see, the ODC and the actions the ODR take are very much linked in that you can maybe see the next step. When the ODC information isn't exactly correct, then ODR routing can kind of go a little haywire. I'll take us to slide 6. Claude, can we move to slide 6? Thank you. It's important to note that the on-demand router doesn't have any kind of static configuration that from ODC on the file system at all. This all happens kind of internally over communication between the processes. There's nothing that it reads in when it starts up to gather its information from ODC. It certainly reads in other properties files on the file system, but in terms of what it gets from ODC, that it's all gathered at runtime, through communication with the other members of the WebSphere cell. So one of the ways, to use the way the ODR makes decisions based off of ODC information, a lot of times that when we see ODR problems, things like requests unable to route and whatnot, they can often be tracked back to the ODC in terms of, so that we can see, oh, well, say this server wasn't running and ODC says it wasn't running and that's why the request wouldn't route. Those kind of things happen all the time. So let's go to slide 7. So understanding that, we want to be able to establish traces and review them so that we can understand what the ODR is doing and understand how it interrelates with ODC state at the time that errors are occurring. So the first thing we can do when we encounter an ODR error is we can set up a trace that will allow us to, you know, get a full understanding of what's going on at the time of the error. I do have the trace string presented here. It starts with this com IBM WS DWM client dot star equals, and then it's a long trace string after that. One of the things that's very helpful, though, is when you do take this trace string, it's often very, 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 very helpful to go ahead and to, if possible, try to purge your old logs and try to capture this information in a new, fresh log. It's much, much easier to work with these files because this is a pretty big voluminous trace. It's much easier to work with them when you have just a small time slice captured and reviewing rather than working with 3 or 4 days worth of trace points. Because even if you don't have any tracing on, we're still going to be writing things to system out and whatnot. So a good practice is to either delete or to rename the old logs and then allow a new one to be created. Moving on to slide 8. So one of the side effects of enabling that trace is that we will produce a file called a target XML on the location of the file system that you can see in your presentation. This XML contains the formatted output of the current ODC state as viewed by the on-demand router. This file is very, I would say, pretty simple to read. It's structured XML. It can be somewhat large, especially if your deployment is large. So one of the things to keep in mind is that you might want to, use, if you have like a, upscale text editor or whatnot, use an XML viewing mode so you can collapse and expand XML nodes and whatnot so you can, better navigate this to the point that you want to get to. But reviewing this file first, after you see a problem with a ODR routing, an HTTP request, is generally the first thing you should do, is to take a look at this. Take a look at the application that you were trying to hit with your request that failed. Try to reference it with the state information in the target XML. Again, you can just search for the application name or search for the application server that you thought that it should be routed to. These things, a lot of times you might come back and see that, hey, that application server was, you know, marked as stopped. The ODR didn't think it was running, or that it wasn't running at all, or that the application name wasn't matching correctly. These kind of errors happen all the time, and you can easily see them by looking at that target XML right from the bat. It's also important to note, and I've seen some confusion on this, that this target XML is only a dump of the current on-demand configuration state. It is not a file that is read off the file system. Like I said previously, the ODC information gathered by the ODR is gathered dynamically through process communication, not through reading in of the file system. It's also important to note that that target XML is generated both at the time we turn on the trace, but that if the actual state information changes, the target XML that is written to the file system also will change. So if you have this trace enabled, you will have the current state of the system in that target XML, even if you have state changes going on at the time during the trace. Move to slide 9. So when you enable this trace, you'll see if you didn't have any previous tracing enabled, in your app server logs directory for the on-demand router where you set the trace, you will actually see a new file there called trace.log, which will contain detailed information from the componentry that we were tracing in that trace stream. What I like to do at this point is I like to use this tool that I've linked in the presentation, this trace analyzer for Webster Application Server to review these traces. Like I say here in the presentation, it has a very easy feature with one click of a button to be able to split all of the runtime threads of the ODR out into different tabs so that you can easily track an incoming HTTP request. This is very handy. The default formatting output of trace.log will go, you know, from one trace point to next trace point regardless of thread, but when you're able to split them out, you can literally follow an entire incoming HTTP request line by line and see very easily the different trace points in the HTTP request. So I highly recommend that tool if you've never used it. It is very useful. Let's go on to slide 10. So when we're looking at that HTTP request in that trace.log after we've broken it out into the thread, kind of the first thing we want to look for is this string of text here where we see this HTTP proxy serve request arrive, a received request. This represents the start of a incoming HTTP request into the ODR when you have this trace enabled. So anything before that isn't necessarily going to be representing the HTTP request that you're trying to trace, but you can actually search for, you know, the URI that you are using to access the failed request in the logs, and then when you see that URI matched with this HTTP proxy server request arrived, received request message, that's when you know that your request starts there. After that, the next key point to look for, and it's usually not too much information, it's usually a couple hundred lines that represent a HTTP request. You can actually go through it line by line, and I often do. But the next key point in this trace is this map request to ODC node entry and exit. What will happen here is this is where the ODR tries to determine where it will map the incoming request to a backend node and server. So what we'll see is that when it's done, we will see you'll see the incoming URI part in part of the entry, the host, the port, and the identifier. And when on the exit, you'll actually see a string. It'll say URI colon so and so, and it'll have a, you know, what looks to be like almost like a path name. You can actually search that path name in the target XML to see where a request, where that request is trying, which URI that request is trying to match in the target XML. So what I like to do at this point is I like to copy that URI into my clipboard, all tabs in my target XML open in my XML viewer, and kind of search for it and see, you know, if we're possibly matching anything. So let's go on to slide 10, I mean 11. So once you find that ODC mode that we've matched to, then a lot of times what you can do is you can actually go in the target XML to where that URI is defined and take a look at the runtime state of the server or servers that you're trying to reach. And a lot of times that's where your problem is. So what you can also, and so if that checks out okay, like, you know, you look at the application state started, the server started, then you can go back to the trace and look for that XD target clust select exit. And that will actually show you the actual backend app server that the request is routed to. And then you can, you know, kind of, what I like to do after that is I like to, you know, bring up a web browser and actually try to hit the app server on the straight on its HTTP port instead of, you know, going through the ODR, just to make sure that the application is still responsive if we access it directly outside of the ODR proxy server. That's kind of a, you know, typical way that I kind of methodically approach dealing with a bad request issue with the ODR. It is very kind of mechanical. You can kind of take the same steps every time, and a lot of times you can really identify quickly where the problem is, either in the ODC state information, which could be incorrect, or with or the ODC state information, which could be, you know, correct, and you just might need to, you know, start an app server or take action. Let's move on to slide 12. Here I'm going to kind of discuss some of the common HTTP error response codes that you might see back from a request routed through the ODR, and kind of give some context as to the usual common causes for that. So a 404, you know, the classic can't find it HTTP response code. So the first and most common thing that we see a 404 with is a virtual host, a failure to, you know, map the request to a virtual host. So the URL matched the context root of a web module that we had installed, but it didn't match a virtual host that we had set up. That's the first thing I would check for in a 404. A lot of times it is virtual host mapping. Sometimes it's duplicate virtual host map, and that it's actually routing to the wrong virtual host because there's more than one that it maps to. We want to, you know, try to avoid that whenever possible. Second, web module is not deployed to a virtual host. That can happen if a virtual host is changed, or if the web module is deployed and then the virtual host settings change. That I see that much more rarely than the first one. State of application is, you know, some value other than started. I do see that quite often. That is when the application is not started. We try to map the request to the application, but it's not running, so you can't find anything. And then the last one, which is one that I think I've seen maybe once or twice, is where we disable routing entirely to the web module, and that's done through XD. So that's a much less common thing. Usually people, you know if they're, you know, disabling routing to it, but the first and the third ones are generally the most common things in the slide. To the slide 13, 503 codes, these are easily the most, I would say, common ones that I run into in my day-to-day work supporting XD. So some of the common causes for a 503 return by the ODR: a web module is not deployed to a server or cluster. This is where the application just, you know, isn't there and I can't route the request to it. No servers in the cluster are running the web module. That's a very, very common thing where it's just, you know, we don't have any servers actually running the web module that we're trying to map to. no reachable or non-zero weight servers are running the application. This is also very, very common. By reachable, that means in the target XML there's actually a reachability piece of text, so it's related to every process that the ODR is could possibly route things to. If that reachability is zero, then we won't try to route requests to it. If it's non-zero, then we will. So a lot of times you might have a running server, but its reachability is set to zero for whatever reason, and you know you'll want to do some investigation if that happens. And so that we can't route a request. And a lot of other times that there's just no servers running, so all be set to stopped. And you can also see that started stop state in the target XML that we have from our trace. And lastly, internal server errors, things like no application state. Those are actually pretty rare on a 503. They do happen, but a lot of times you can just go to the backend server and see the problem there. And if you try to route a request straight to the HTTP transport to that backend server, you should still see an error code come back. Go to slide 14. I want to go over two scripts that we do ship with WebSphere XD that allow for much more rapid, I would say, kind of diagnosing of ODR problems. One of these scripts is new. It's called odrdebug.py. It was shipped in the 6.1.0.1 maintenance. I believe that it is being included in the 6.0.2.2 XD release as well. Now, what this script does is allows you to basically set kind of a monitor on the on-demand router to watch for HTTP error codes like 404s and 503s and 504s. So you invoke it using the syntax here listed, this wsadmin.sh/lang, that you see in front of us, and you actually give it the node name that the ODR is running on, the actual server name of the ODR, the HTTP error code, say 404. You just say true, that's just a static thing, and the debug level, setting from 0 to 2. You can find more documentation on how to invoke this tool also in the WebSphere Info Center. It has been updated for 6.1 with a full example of this. Let's move to slide 15. Now, after you run this script, what you'll want to do is you'll want to go back and recreate the case where the HTTP error response code is returned by the ODR. Then when you go to the systemout.log, you'll see a new set of information there that has been enabled because the script is run. And what it will have, it will actually have, error code 503, and it'll kind of give you a reasoning why that 503 happened, say no servers to route requests to or no running servers to route requests to, and it'll give you some information gathered from ODC to back up why it was not able to route that request. It is probably the quickest way to solve a simple, I can't believe I forgot to do that, style ODR routing problem. It's new, so I haven't used it that much, but it is still, I would say, probably the first, maybe one of the first things you're going to want to do if you run into a bad return code when routing a HTTP request through the ODR. I think it's very, very simple to use and very easy. You don't have to take a full trace. You don't have to review a target XML. You just have the key information presented for you. Go to slide 16. The other script I wanted to discuss was this dump ODR state.jackal. This script is both included in 6.1 and 6.02 right now. This is also a good first response to ODR errors. It's invoked in a very similar manner to the other script, using wsadmin, and then you just say wsadmin.sh /F. There's actual, you actually want to look at the info center. I believe I do have a typo, and I did not catch it in the invocation here. I don't think that will work. So make sure you take a look at the info center for this. But what it will do is it will actually, output, in the command line that you run it, useful ODR state information, including contents of the target XML. Very useful for getting that target XML information without running a full trace. You can see how this may be handy if you are in an environment where you do not want to be creating large amounts of file system data due to whatever reason, say performance or space issues. This can be handy, but it's still not... not necessarily. You won't get the full information that you would if you turned on the trace and got the target XML that way. Save slide 17. So kind of in summary, ODR errors are generally approached in a very methodical manner every time. You have your tracing. You have key trace points that you can navigate to get information. You have your target XML. With the ODC state information, which is often very key into resolving these problems. So one of the things that's really, I think, important when I review these, and that one of the things I can pass on to you as you attempt to troubleshoot your problems, is to, try to, keep a methodical manner to this, kind of laid out a way that you can do this, and it is very, very valuable. It will save you time, and it will produce, I think, very accurate results. 503 and 404 return error codes generally have a pretty small set of causes. When you run into those errors, you should be keeping those causes in mind as you go through the tracing or as you go through the outputs and the scripts. And those scripts that we do ship, I think, are very valuable, very useful, and they can definitely speed up problem determination, especially on those simple causes. And slide 18, I think, is the resources slide. Here's just some additional resources that we have available that you can use. Of course, the Webster XD Info Center, which you can access through the FIP product, is also very, very useful. It has full up-to-date information on the scripting commands that I presented at the end of my presentation. I think slide 19 is a Q&A, and I would like to open up the floor to questions that you may have about my presentation or about ODR troubleshooting in general.
Thank you, Robert. A great presentation.
And we'll take our first question from Diana Hsu.
Hey, I have a couple of questions. First question is, where is this ODC configuration? Is that is the a static file that we can trace? We can look at on the file system.
The ODC information itself is generated from the app servers, and they communicate to kind of gather it, and the ODR consumes it. It is. The actual state information is written to the file system when you have tracing enabled to that target XML. That file is a kind of only a dump of the current state. It is not actually read in. You cannot, edit the target XML, for example, to change the ODC state. That actually comes, again, from a information collected across multiple Webster processes, and is posted kind of a tool, a bulletin board, that the ODC reads in when it creates, when it starts up, and also while it's running.
Okay. Second question is, when the HTTP traffic passed from web server to the ODR, we lost the source IP address. And is there any way that I can trace the source IP in ODR level?
Okay, so let me understand this question right. When we pass requests from the ODR to the backend app server, we lose the client IP address?
No, from web server. From web server to ODR.
From?
The web server, IHS.
Oh, from IHS to the ODR?
Yeah.
Okay.
The ODR actually logs the web server's IP instead of source IP.
Okay, instead of the client, instead
the
client, of the
yeah.
IP.
So is there any way that we can keep the source IP when traffic passes through web server to the ODR?
I believe so, yes. I believe that we store that information in a separate header. And I will need to look up that header. I don't have it offhand, but I am almost certain that we actually do retain that source IP information in a separate header that you can access.
And do we need to enable trace to be able to see that header?
I believe, yes, that you would need to enable a trace to see that header, although I think you can also pull it out just as part of your, if you wanted to debug your backend application, you could actually just, you know, add a logging message to the application itself. But I think you can also enable a trace to pull out that header as well. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah.
And as a reminder to everyone, that is star one if you have a question at this time. And we'll hear next from Nanda Kumar Shamugam from Cisco Systems.
Hi, this is Nanda. I have basically this is a great presentation about ODR troubleshooting. Once the ODR is started, we can troubleshoot. But I do have issues in starting up the ODR itself. So recently I have applied a 6101 patch. So WXDOP. OOC, they call it operations optimization controller.
Right.
After I applied this patch, the ODR is not starting. It is erroring out in SIP protocol filters. If you don't mind, I can copy-paste the error message.
I think this issue is possible because this is kind of okay, let's see here. Proxy is unable to start context filter SIP equal ODR. I think for... I don't recognize that error off the top of my mind. I don't think I've seen it after someone has applied the 6101 maintenance. You know, the ODR does have a set of filters that you can, that proxy filters that you can use, and that maybe we're tripping up on that you might have set or that we might have tried to set. I think for this issue, it would be most appropriate, if possible, to open up a PMR with IBM XT Level 2 support, and we'll be able to, I think, help out further than we could on this presentation.
Okay. And what I did was I have disabled the SIP protocol when I created the ODR, and then after that, the ODR starts fine if you disable this SIP protocol.
Okay.
So currently, we have no need for this SIP protocol, so for now, it is okay. But anyway, like, I have filed a PMR with IBM, and I'm following today.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes.
And as a final reminder, that is star one if you have a question today, and we'll pause again for just a moment. And it appears we have no further questions at this time.
I will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the web series Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on the site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Robert, for presenting today.
Thank you, everyone, for attending.